Welcome to the Mornings with Sue and Andy podcast for Monday, April 22nd. The company you work for provides you with a work phone. Great, right? But does this mean you're always on call and reachable by your employer? What about work-life balance? We hear details on how the 2024 federal budget is proposing new right-to-disconnect legislation for federally regulated industries. We discuss the potential impact of the legislation with Professor Nita Chinzer from the University of Guelph.
Could a poor diet increase your risk of certain types of cancer? According to a new study, that just may be the case. We dig into the research with Dr. Ted Jablonski, our on-call family physician.
And finally, what if we threw the rule book out and allowed top athletes to use performance-enhancing drugs in competitions? The so-called enhanced games could be coming to reality as early as next year. We get details on the concept from Christina Smith, former Olympian and athlete relations representative for the enhanced games.
If you have a company phone or work email linked to your device, it can blur the lines between your work and personal life. Well, the federal budget is looking to make changes to the Canadian Labor Code to help people working in federally regulated fields to exercise their right to disconnect. Joining us to discuss is Nita Chinzer, Associate Professor in Human Resource Management and Business Consulting in the Department of Management at the University of Guelph. Welcome to the program, Nita.
I work from home. I fully understand what's going on with many of you who are also finally, right?
You understand. Well, it's interesting because we want to break this down as far as the parameters that are being put forth, the significance of the right to disconnect in the 2024 federal budget for Canadian workers' well-being. And at this point, the federal is one of the key words we need to underscore, right, Professor?
Right, exactly. So Canada has got 14 distinct employment jurisdictions. So most, you know, the provinces, 10 provinces and 3 territories, and then federal level are people who work for crown corporations, National Post, Transit, that's national. So in that case, we're looking at, about 9% of the labor force actually works at the federal level. So it's a relatively small group, but the good thing is that usually what happens at the federal level sets the pace for what the other provinces do. Ontario already has a right to disconnect framework, and that was launched a couple of years ago, but this is the first time that Canada collectively is taking a step forward, saying maybe we need to set this precedent and see what the other provinces do as well.
So when we talk about it, the right to disconnect, what does that look like? For now, it means only for federal workers, right? But potentially down the line, that could change things dramatically for many industries, for most companies perhaps. So, how does that, let's talk about the difference in adding in a right to disconnect and what that changes in your work-life balance.
Definitely. So having the right to do something protects you from reprimand. For example, I have the right to refuse unsafe work across Canada. So if I think something I'm going to do is going to endanger me, I have the right to refuse unsafe work and I can't be reprimanded. I can't be fired. I can't be demoted. I can't be written up for exercising that right. So what we're looking at here with the right to disconnect is saying that this is a fundamental employment right that we are now going to protect. Traditionally, this has been in other legislation like the Employment Standards Act or the Labor Code, where they've told us that we have 8 hours of rest at the federal level. So between your shifts, you have 8 hours of rest. And Ontario, which also launched the right to connect, it was, 11 hours uninterrupted between shifts. But that's really not enough. What we saw was a bleeding where people were expected to be checking emails on Friday nights and on Saturday mornings, and they were getting a little bit more anxious and feeling more taken advantage of. So this right to disconnect says that if you opt to disconnect, which you have the right to do, then you can't be reprimanded. You can't show up to a meeting on Monday and your boss said, I gave you the information on Friday night, which is not your working hours. I gave you the information on Saturday and you didn't prepare for this meeting. You can't be reprimanded that way. So at this point, the right just says that you are free from reprimand. Mm. But there's a whole scaffolding that has to happen behind the scenes. So behind the scenes, the companies have to come up with the policy. Say, these are your working hours and these are your non-working hours. And with flex hours, that might be individually negotiated. Mm-hmm. A lot of unionized environments are saying that you have the right to disconnect, and to protect you, what we're going to do is have a very steep penalty. If you get called off of hours and it's an emergency situation, there's going to be a minimum 3-hour rule here where you'll get paid for 3 hours even if you're answering a 15-minute question, because it's taking you away from your private time. It's taking you away mentally, physically, and it's hard to get back into that time. So you'll get 3 hours at this overtime rate. So we have to set in systems for what happens when we do need to contact people. There have to be grievance procedures set up. If my boss contacts me after hours, who am I supposed to complain to? I can't go and complain to my boss about that. He's the one who's contacting me after hours, or she is, right? The biggest violators are the people that would be involved with the escalation procedures. So we have to have that in place. And then, honestly, we have to go and educate managers on what it means to be outside of hours. You know, you might want to send a message because you want to get it off your plate. Managers are overworked too. But when a manager sends a message on a Saturday morning or on a Thursday night, they don't realize the damage they're doing with making people feel pressured to respond right away. So helping set those systems in place will really help this work.
Very interesting, this whole right to disconnect conversation. And like you say, this is just the beginning. We'll see how things look down the line. But in the meantime, thanks for your insight, Anita. We appreciate it.
No worries. Have a great day.
Thank you. That is Professor Anita Chinzer. She is a Human Resources Management and Business Consulting Department professional from the Management Department at the University of Guelph. We all know the negative health effects of a poor diet. And now, according to a new study, our food choices could increase the risk of some cancers. To get details on the research, we turn to Dr. Ted Jablonski, our on-call family physician. Good morning to you and happy Monday, Dr. J.
Good morning. Happy Monday also.
This is disturbing, particularly when you look at, you know, the fact that even many of us these days want to eat healthy, but we do know some of those healthy choices are even more expensive. So tell us about this study and where it came from.
So it's a really, really interesting study. Now, it's done on cells, not on even animals or human beings. So just that the most basic unit of a human body is the cell. And what they found out is that glucose is broken down. So this is sugar is broken down into a substrate called methylglyoxal. So we're going to get a little bit technical here. And methylglyoxal can actually stop one of our genes from helping us protect against cancer. Mm. That's the simplest version of that. So sugar gets broken down into this substrate, methylglyoxal. Bad for us, knocks out this gene which helps us protect cancer, so we have a higher risk of getting cancers.
Dr. J,
how is that?
Actually, thank you for dumbing it down, because that makes sense to the dummies in this room anyway, hopefully to everybody else. Just, you know, make it easily understandable, right? I mean, and to bring it kind of home, like, we can understand that, you know, having a poor diet, eating badly can increase the risk of us being fat overall.
Yeah.
Heart disease, diabetes, we know all those things. This is not something new, though, or is it, with it, you know, increasing the risk of cancer?
This is new, right? In the sense that it's exactly correct. We know that a bad diet, for whatever reason, right? We carry too much weight, which has a huge impact on cardiovascular health, on diabetes. We've always known there is a cancer connection, but we've never been able to actually pinpoint what that connection actually is specifically, more than just globally. Hey, if you eat bad, you're going to be unhealthy. Unhealthy means more cancer. So this is a very, very specific thing, and it's new. I've never heard of this. So this is all connected to the BRCA gene. And if you might remember, so Angelina Jolie had double mastectomy.
Yes.
Right? And then she was the sort of Hollywood star who brought this out. We've known about the BRCA gene for a long time. So if you have a wrong genetic, and this is on the female side, very, very high risk. If not, you will guarantee get breast cancer and some type of gynecologic cancer. So the only play there would be to do a double mastectomy, total hysterectomy. That was the only way you could prevent cancer, because your body could not prevent cancer. The gene, you didn't get the right gene.
Wow.
This is where this sugar thing comes in. This is the story, is that it actually impairs that gene. So you might have the gene, but if it can't act properly, you might as well not even have the gene, just like Angelina Jolie, right? So it's a very, very interesting finding.
Yeah.
And
scary.
Off the
scary.
It is if you're eating a bad diet. So what's the take-home message? Try to reduce your carbohydrates, particularly processed foods, the sugars, that high sugar load, because it gets broken down into this chemical. And this chemical can temporarily not allow your genetics to do what they're supposed to do, which is protect us.
Wow, interesting. So when you've mentioned the term sugar a couple of times here. Is that, you know, adding sugar, or are these processed foods that we might be grabbing?
Yeah, but probably both. So we've known, again, if you're going to cut something dietary-wise, it should be the carbohydrates, and particularly the those simple sugars that we find in processed foods, as opposed to complex carbohydrates, which are more in fruits and vegetables and healthy things that we know about. So we do reference, or this article does reference, the Mediterranean diet. If you know about this, this is a good healthy diet. If you've never heard about this, read about it. Mediterranean diet is sort of a very natural diet that every time we do any major study, this diet seems to come through as being a lot better than a lot of others because of it. It is more complex carbohydrates. It has healthy fats. It has good protein. It has all the good things we need, and it's not processed.
So, Dr. J, if we cut as much sugar as possible from our diet, then can we switch back on those cancer-preventing genes?
Yes. Yeah, they're working right now until you disabled them. So the default is that they do work. But if you keep beating them over the head and not allowing them to do their thing, then that's when they're disabled to some degree. And this is a temporary thing. That's the good news again, right? That if we actually say, I mean, we all love to eat good desserts, or, enjoy good food, right? And it's just a temporary thing. But if you're eating a bad diet day after day after day, meal after meal after meal, then this gene never gets a chance to recover and do its thing. So it's all temporary. So if you do indulge, make sure it's just temporary and get back on a good, healthy diet thereafter.
I like that. It gives me hope that I can still have pizza night and wing night.
Just don't sprinkle sugar on it.
95% of the time, got to ride those rails. Thank you so much for your insight, Dr. J. Have a great week ahead.
Okay, you betcha.
That is Dr. Ted Jablonski, our on-call family physician.
What if we threw the rule book out and allowed top athletes to use performance-enhancing drugs in competition? The so-called enhanced games could be coming to reality as early as next year. It's backed by an Australian businessman, and there's a Calgary connection. Joining us to talk about it, Christina Smith, Olympian, author, and athlete relations rep for the enhanced games. Hi, Christina. Thanks for coming into the studio.
Thank you so much for having me.
Great to see you again. Okay, so, I mean, my vision, and we talked a little bit off air, and now I get it a bit more. So my vision when I heard about this enhanced games is just a bunch of steroid pumped, you know, meathead athletes competing against each other. But that's not at all what this is.
That's right. No, we're talking about enhancements that go across the board from natural enhancements to pharmaceuticals. So as myself, as an athlete, I went through using, you know, performance, now I can call them performance enhancement in the sense of vitamin intravenous, you know, prolotherapy, you know, various injections that were to help me recover, help me get over jet lag, or help me from my profound, you know, workouts and things. But I never in a million years thought that I was doing anything that was, you know, illegal until I actually brought it to the Canadian Sports Center. And I said, you know, there's all these great things that I've discovered with my naturopathic doctor. Mm-hmm. And they, like, I was looked at as if I was bringing forth this information that was, like, illegal. And it just mortified me.
Mm. Well, what's interesting is I had a hard time describing it because, to me, it's all we know differently in the sense that we know the sky is blue. All of a sudden, you're saying the sky isn't blue, saying it's all right to use these enhancements. But what I like about this is, as a professional athlete, as an athlete, this is your world. This is from the athletes. The athletes are giving this the thumbs up. It's not just an organizer of an event.
Oh, absolutely. I have done countless interviews with athletes all over the world. They're either, you know, the stories would bring you to tears, to, you know, being caught doing something, you know, with a positive drug test that they actually, you know, had no idea it was just something tainted in their, you know, their protein powder. So, I mean, these athletes have been gone just like myself through highs and lows, trying to find a way to stay natural, you know, because, you know, the supplements out there, it's rampant that, you know, there's traces of everything. So mm-hmm. it's very, very hard to lead a life of, you know, not
like breaking. Being so-called clean, right?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So we're changing the culture or the language, and we want to come up with, you know, encouraging people to use the terms natural as well as enhanced or performance enhancements versus, you know, the D word. And we're really looking at merging the science and sports together. And also, we do know, and athletes know, that it is going on. So it's inevitable. And all this stuff is actually dangerous. When athletes are trying to, you know, be faster, higher, stronger, you know, whether you say you can't or you can do it, they're going to do it regardless because mm-hmm. athletes are competitive. Mm-hmm. And there's things going on that we're trying to prevent. You know, it's like bring out that elephant in the room, expose it, be transparent, teach safe practices. You know, there's so much to be educated around this.
And we have a million questions for you. Yeah. So can you just give us even a couple of examples yeah. of substances that would be allowed in this case to make it make sense for us?
You know, FDA-approved compounds is what, you know, that's we focus on. However, again, we're not policing athletes. It's not cheating in our games because we don't have drug testing. However, we have health testing. And we are more concerned about the health of the athlete. So if they so choose to be transparent and to bring out and to talk about the stuff, we're all about the education. We have scientists and medical clinicians that are just excited about what we're doing because they want to share this knowledge. They want to get the research. They also want the participation of athletes to be part of this. But we are so very focused on the safety and the protocol. Mm. So we have a great team of doctors and the highest, you know, that you can find that are from Harvard and Oxford working on these protocols.
So when we use the term enhanced games, I want to get some idea of the type of games or events we might see under the umbrella, you know, with these enhancements present during competition.
Yeah, so there's five categories. So athletics, so track and field, aquatics, so anything in the pool or diving. And we have combat, MMA, wrestling, boxing, and we also have gymnastics and strength, so any weightlifting yeah. events.
That's cool. Fascinating. Okay, so, I mean, is it going to happen? And if it is, when, where, how do we get involved? How do we see it?
Yeah. So they haven't released all the details because, of course, there's negotiations with broadcasters and venues. However, 2025 is the year.
Okay.
And I'm currently actually casting, like we're looking for athletes to be part of the games. So I'm doing like multiple interviews all over the time zones. But at the same time, we're looking for 10 top athletes that have compelling stories that would be part of a Ridley Scott, Rob McElhenney documentary wow. series that we're doing. So it's amazing. So if there are any athletes out there, you know, and we're looking even for older athletes because, you know,
yeah,
science.
Yeah, it can extend the career,
yeah.
right?
Yes, yeah. exactly. Science is real. And science, everybody is into anti-aging, longevity.
And you that know? Would be included in what's so-called enhanced, right?
Exactly. And that's what we really want to push is that you can be a natural athlete in our games, but you can also be an enhanced athlete. No judgment. And we really just want to broaden the spectrum as well as educate people about what is available. You know, my interest was all around stem cell, exosome therapy, and, you know, all those regenerative therapies. And then there's people that are interested in more, you know, the pharmaceutical side. Mm-hmm. And so we're, again, it's about the education, bringing forward, being transparent, and really doing things safely.
Incredible. Yeah. Thank you for your time. We appreciate it because, yeah, on paper, I think about that Saturday right? Night Live skit where the guys are lifting weights and
pump it
yeah,
up.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's
thank
right.
Thank you so much, Christina, for coming in.
My pleasure.
Christina Smith, Olympian, author, brain injury advocate, and athlete relations for the Enhanced Games.